I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome to the Featured Anime Podcast. I'm your host, Jack.
And I'm Rick.
And today we are talking about CJ's choice from our Discord, Rascal Does Not Dream of Bunny Girl Senpai, which was a pretty good choice, if I do say so myself.
I found myself surprised because I liked it, but disappointed at the same time.
Yep.
And not because... Oh, go ahead, sorry.
Yeah, you're good. It's all right. You're good. Before that, we were talking about work experiences, how Rick decided to try and make himself look like Scar
a Bond villain.
A Bond villain that got in a fight with Optimus Prime but failed horribly. You want to catch a part of that wider conversation? Patreon.com/featuredanimepodcast. Dollar a month will get you all that bonus content and more. Now, on to the meat and potatoes. Rascal Does Not Dream of Bunny Girl Senpai. It is 13 episodes long. It came out in October 2018 and ran all the way through December 2018. Producers for our Aniplex, Tokyo MX, Kodokawa, just to name a couple. Cloverworks for the studio. It's based off of a light novel, and the genres are a comedy, drama, romance, supernatural, and school. Now, I was told by CJ that there was actually a movie to this. I could not find the movie. That is basically the sequel to Bunny Girl Senpai. And I'm really disappointed because I could not find it. So I know that Jeb usually has his ways of being able to get a hold of certain things in our Discord. And mainly because he just spends a lot of money on pretty awesome stuff, if I do say so myself. So I'll probably see if he has that eventually, maybe, kind of, okay. Yeah, sort of. Jeb.
I would love to see. Yeah, hint, hint, nudge, nudge. I would love to see the movie because it's not that I'm disappointed. I'm disappointed in Netflix, if I can even say that. Because you told me, so I started watching it on the tried and true VRV/Crunchyroll, whatever the hell we were watching it on.
Right.
And what ends up happening is you tell me that it's on dubbed. And I'm like, okay, I'd like to see it dubbed because we one other reason we were discussing.
Right. So
I hop over to Netflix and I, for some weird reason, I'm like, I think it's given me these weird tags. And on episode two, I'm thinking, okay, something's wrong with this kid. He's insane. He's got something wrong with him. And that's when I switched over to Netflix because I was thinking maybe if I throw it subbed and watch it dubbed, something will happen that I will make sense to me. And what Netflix does is they give you tags of what it could be. And one of them is suicide.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay. So I started watching it from episode three all the way done on the premise that someone's going to commit suicide, or this is him going through the stages of depression, or, you know,
right.
And I was fully dedicated to not being attached to any one character, you know?
Well, the thing is, and Jeb in our chat brings up a very good point. Everyone is disappointed in Netflix. I know I am most of the time when it comes to a lot of things. I'll tell you this. They will throw up tags or throw up warnings like this one saying suicide, even if someone is going to attempt it. And they do that more so to kind of cover their bases and make sure that they're not going to get any blowback from you, me, someone else randomly watching it and go, you didn't put this in there and this is totally in there. And the only point where suicide even becomes a remote possibility is when our main character, Sakuta, is with with my sister, who transforms into Mai, And she tries to commit suicide because she's convinced no one needs her, that she is not wanted or needed, that everyone just wants to focus on her sister. And that's where the suicide disclaimer comes in there, because she does try to commit suicide. And I'll tell you this about the show, Rascal Does Not Dream of Bunny Girl Senpai. It touches on a lot of philosophical and realistic viewpoints, as well as throws some science fiction in there, and then touches on quantum physics a little bit as well. So
it seems like every episode had a very decent, science,
foundation.
Yeah. Foundation. And then they used the scientific method to try to solve and deduce. And it was kind of cool. They used commonly known, scenarios like Schrodinger's cat. Or
Laplace's demon.
That was a good one.
And one of the things I actually really enjoyed about it was the point at which you are following along with the character, you learn everything that's going on along with the character at the exact same time, you know?
Yeah, you're not an overview. You're an over the shoulder.
Yeah. And I found that pretty interesting. I also found it really, really interesting that the picture card, or the title card rather, is of Mai in the Bunny Girl costume. And you see her once or twice in the Bunny Girl costume, aside from the opening credits, but that's it. Like, the Bunny Girl portion of it plays no real portion to the actual core story at all.
Well, I mean, yeah, I agree with you. It plays very, very minute amount, but it does serve as a catalyst to start things off.
It does. Yeah. And I'm not saying that it doesn't serve as a catalyst, but I will say that the name of it definitely does not lend to what you're expecting right off the bat.
No. So what I was expecting when I walked into it, what I was expecting was something to the effect of this kid, he committed suicide, or he's dying, because everything that a young man wants that wants to happen. And when I say this, I mean this with all sincerity. You know how people say don't meet your heroes?
Yeah.
And they shoot for the stars, you might hit the moon, or who shoot for the moon, you might hit the stars, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
To me, that kind of says something along the lines of, you know, it's nice to have a goal that is beyond your reach, perpetually beyond your reach, because the second you achieve a goal, you set a major life goal that you set, then like what else? It's one of my friends has a really bad habit of nexting. Like, okay, I reached here, now what? I reached here, now what? I reached here, now what? They're not satisfied. They don't take a minute to sit back, because right, they're waiting for the other shoe to drop, you know? And I'm like, you've accomplished so much. You need to sit back and just enjoy the hard work. Enjoy the fruits of your labor for a day or two. You don't always have to push. Whereas here, he always wants to take his relationship to the next level. To like, he wants a kiss. He wants more. He always jokes in lewd manners, and I love it. But I thought it was a dream of some kind, because what he actually says he wants is always eluding him. He gets a peck on the cheek. He gets a pinch, you know.
Well, at the same time, I can understand the viewpoint on that, but I really never felt like it was a dream at any point in time during it. Simply because even though he's trying to achieve it, the reactions or the interactions that are happening or the stories that are going on definitely didn't make it feel like it was a dream. It felt more like there was a bigger overarching plan happening. And I feel like that's kind of like what it was basically alluding to, which was puberty syndrome is what they call it. And they refer to it as a myth. until you actually encounter it or have to deal with it.
Yeah.
And each one, I feel like they did it in arcs. And did you watch the ending credits?
Yeah.
Okay. I loved how when the focal point of the character for the evolution and changes that were going on, that was actually who was singing.
No shit.
Yeah. So the voice of the person that was singing at the end for the end credits and the person that was walking on the beach was the focal point of who was going through these changes, who was evolving.
Yeah. That's true. I didn't even think about that. I never made that connection.
And I thought it was really great that they did that. It made it so that way you knew who the focal point was. It made it so that way you...
character for that particular episode.
Yeah, okay. So it's like you have Sakatua, who was there helping him along the way, trying to be a kindred spirit and figure everything out. But the focal point of it is Ryo, Mai, Kaede, Tomoe, it focuses on them. It's on them, their growth. And it touched on several other different aspects as well. It's like, why are you repeating this? Why would you repeat the same day over and over and over again? Because you're not getting the result that you actually want. You mm-hmm. keep interacting in a particular way where you're not getting the result. And I love how it goes, fine, since I didn't get the result that I wanted in the end, I'm going to go back to the very beginning. We're just going to start from there because it's only right. It's only fair. Or for the ideology and psychology behind it all, for her actually actively disappearing from everyone's memories as they went to sleep because of how she chose to embrace the fact that she didn't want to be in show business because of all these other problems. And she wanted to be invisible and didn't want to have to deal with the conflict or issues of everyone else.
Yeah.
So it's wonderful that they were able to tie in these intricate stories and lessons into each arc, I want to say, at the same time.
Okay, so if I understand what you're saying correctly, basically it's 13 episodes, but you've got, whenever we switch main characters, it's a new arc.
Basically.
We spend about 2 or 3 episodes, typically, on each, specifically on each character. So you're looking at about 6 different story arcs.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. Exactly.
That makes sense. That makes sense. Yeah, A story and B story, I think.
Yeah. And so like the B story is the separate small arcs and the A story is the story between Mai and Sakutua and their journey together overall.
Now, here's why I thought it was him going through some kind of mental break. Mm. For some reason, I always like threes. I'm going to attempt 3. I think I only have 2, but let's go for 3. First, he's got a scar on his chest that is a focal point, but never really explained what the hell happened. And then at the end, it starts to bleed. When it started to bleed, I figured that was when he woke up and that was the real thing. The second part is, when he got the scar, he met a woman who looked similar to Mai, but wasn't. It was his crush of some kind. And then when it bled again, he met her as an adult. Again, he's the only one that saw her both times. So I figured a mental break of sorts. The phone number that she gave him does not work. So yeah, maybe he wrote it down.
No.
She didn't answer.
She didn't answer, but it worked because he was talking to her. However, what he's saying is he saw her as an adult, or rather mm-hmm. as an older student in that school, which is why he went to that school and no one ever had any record of her. But then he mm-hmm. met someone who looked identical to her mm-hmm. when they were younger, with the exact same name, with an identical name. Yeah. And when he tried calling her when she hadn't appeared for a few days, it wasn't that he couldn't get a hold of her because she gave him the wrong number. It's that she just wasn't there available for him. And then she called back and apologized for him not being able to get a hold of her.
See, I always thought it was one of the Tyler Durden scenarios where, yeah, he wrote down the number. He obviously called the number. Whenever he attempted to reach out, he never got a hold of her. However, he spoke to her on the return. Just like with Tyler Durden, he couldn't call. He couldn't make a phone call, but he could receive. Tyler Durden is the... So I'm referring to Fight Club, but Tyler Durden was the alter ego, not the primary.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So the primary was reaching out, but never could get a hold of him, except when Tyler Durden reached out. For instance, the payphone that does not accept any incoming phone calls. He made a phone call out, didn't work. And then when he hung up, it rang and he answered it like that. So he was talking to himself. That's where I was going with it. Cause he never, when he made the effort, it never succeeded. But when he was receiving the effort, it worked.
Right.
So that was my second thing. My third thing, and I knew I had three, because the second one I didn't even think about till I was in the middle of talking. But the third thing was, how many teenage boys have a fantasy of dating an idol?
Okay. Well, I don't know how that one's a third thing, because...
Well, that's what I mean. That was one of my evidences backing it up. His fantasies are coming true. He sees my on magazines.
Hang on. If that's your thing, then I don't know, 50% of the anime out there fit that exact bill. I don't think
on this one. Cause a lot of them don't deal with trauma and stuff like that.
Some of them do. Some of them deal with this exact same premise. Some of them don't. How they approach the premise is vastly different. That is not number three. That shouldn't even be considered.
It is for me. Remember episode three, I was looking at a tag that said suicide. So I'm like, okay, so maybe that's where my mind was coming from. That's why I was going,
okay,
this isn't real. This isn't.
Well,
so I was expecting,
if that's how it's going to be at the last episode of Attack on Titan, Aaron's going to wake up from his dream, and then that's going to be it. So
didn't we point that out, like, on Discord a while ago?
Oh, I shared the picture. Yeah. I remember that. Yes. So that's how it's going to end up being. I mean, like, if that's the premise you're going to go with, a lot of stuff really happens. And hey, guess what? It's all a dream.
Time for school.
Yep, Buffy the Vampire Slayer all over again.
God.
Horrid. Okay. Yeah. Anyways.
I agree. I
digress.
No, I agree with you. It's not a good way to end a show. It's a cop-out. It's Roseanne all over again. The last season was just a myth. Yeah, it's not a good way to end. And there's the, as you said, Buffy, as I said, Roseanne, there's many different examples of how to do it poorly.
Right. Right.
And I thought that what we were seeing was we were following him on his path to acceptance.
Well,
and all of these fantastic things only happened to him. Nobody else.
It's not fantastic things just happening to him. And it's not everything that it's not everything that happens to him is fantastic either. There's a lot of messed up stuff that happens. And it's not just to him.
I agree.
It's to his sister too. And you know, it's a matter of how you choose to approach it, how you choose to tackle the problem. So it's not that everything great is happening, because there are some messed up stuff that happens. All right.
True.
So I don't agree with your number three. I mean, like, I get that that's your number three. I get that that's where you could come from, especially with the tag of it being like suicide, or with the label of it having suicide on there from Netflix. I could see where you're coming from, especially with the possibility of someone being dead or dying or something like that. This whole thing could have been him as he swan dove off the building, and this whole thing's happening as he's falling to his death, and boom, that's it. Right. It could have been that.
I wasn't quite going that far, but
you know,
it just seemed too convenient that he was part of everybody else's thing. Like, he was the main character. He suffered. His sister forgot who she was. And the trauma of that could have potentially drove him to the point of doing something regrettable. And then his parents aren't there. And then his parents are there.
Well,
and then he's dating a movie model. And then he's repeating the day with Groundhog. And then everybody around him has, like, the chick has a duplicate, which was, I'm not going to lie, kind of cool. I liked how they did that one. But,
well, you see, the thing is take, for example, the first couple of episodes, right? It's like everyone's forgetting her except for him, right? Well, they explained why he wasn't forgetting her, or why people weren't forgetting her. And then he finally did forget her, right?
And after he slept,
after he slept. So you have that foundation for it. And then key factors in your memory are like the same thing with anything else. Like, it could be something completely random or whatever. that triggers your memory and it forces you to finally remember something that you had long since forgotten or had been omitted from, right? And that's how it was for there. The same thing for the story with, I want to say, Tomoe. It's not that he necessarily, and they explained it too. It's not that he was the focal point or he was there because he wanted to be. He was there because he had that forceful impact from Tomoe in him. And that's the only reason why he didn't relive the same day over and over again without that knowledge. He had the knowledge that every day was repeating. And that's the only reason why is because, and Ryo explained it. Now, what he wasn't a part of, but he figured out was Ryo's when she split into two. And I think that's a really good foundation for, we all have two people that we're at conflict with, and they're both of them inside ourselves. We have the people we want to be and the people that we are, and we have the people that we strive to be and the people that we can't be. And so we have that constant internal conflict, except for Ryo, it wasn't internal anymore. It was external. And so you had Ryo and Ryo, and one was living one life a little bit more risque, so to speak, being a little bit more open, being a little bit more vocal than the other one. The other one was very withdrawn and didn't want to do anything. And then you have the Noroka and Mai, the sisters, right? They switched places, and they even explain that at the exact same time. It's like, it's not that their souls inhabited the other body. It's that they, and this is where I'm glad that they showed the physical transformation between the two.
That was, I'm not going to say creepy, but a little bit. And I was like, this is so cool. Imagine having the other scenarios where it reverts to the previous day and everyone shifts back. And then when the person split, to have them merge back together again to be of one mind, all that stuff is kind of cool. But it's also goes to the point, there's an old saying that everyone has three faces. And they did a really good analogy here. You have the face you show everybody, the face your family sees, and the face that you know. You know what I mean? And it's perfectly valid there. You've got a mask you put on everywhere else. And you can't lie to yourself. No matter how good at lying you are, how convincing you are to others, you know it's a lie. And you can't fool yourself. And I think that's what they were trying to show there. And it was really,
well, it's
really well done.
Well, for the one where their bodies are switched, it's not so much that, it's like, it's a more of a, the grass is greener on the other side, or if, how would it be if I was them? My life would be better if I was them. And so for them, it was like kind of twofold. Like Mai felt like she just wanted to be her sister, not have all that pressure or responsibilities and everything like that, that Noroka has, her sister, and Noroka is the exact same way. She's like, it would be better if I was Mai because I would have all this and everything like that, and everything would be instantly better. And then she comes to the realization that the reason why Mai is so good is because she puts forth a very strong, solid effort and dedicates herself 100%, not realizing that Noroka was the catalyst for her pushing herself so hard.
You know, work ethic over talent every day. There's also a saying that talent without effort is wasted.
Yes.
So
unless I mean, you're me, which case I'm just wasteful all the time. So
I was going to say, you're nothing but talent.
I mean, overall though, I feel like the show is really well worth it. It is very well rounded. It's a very balanced show. The ending credits, I actually really enjoyed. I loved the music when it was there. It was a focal point. It was very prominent when it needed to be, but it didn't detract from the actual show overall.
And it wasn't overwhelming. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, and I feel like there really wasn't anything too wrong with it. The only thing is I do have a lot of questions. I have a lot of questions for Shuko and who she is, what's going on, what the story is with it, what's the deal behind it. We know that she's a real person. We know that she exists because other people have seen her, and she did leave writing. So it's not like everything just completely disappears. I want to know what Sakata's, what his puberty syndrome is, because I feel like the scars on his chest have to deal with that.
And it has to.
It has to. So I know that there's going to be more answers out there, and
maybe in the movie.
Well, CJ in our chat says there are more answers in the movie. So I'm definitely looking forward to watching the movie, and I'll have to check that out. We'll probably have to revisit it again with a little bit more information a little bit later on, and maybe even end up having to change our scores based off of that. But
well, I was going to say, if we could watch the movie, do you want to do a standalone episode?
Probably a standalone would be better.
Okay. I'm not against that at all.
Yeah.
But I don't think it'd be a good addition to this.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
So I don't really have too much more I can say on it. What about you, Rick? Is there anything else you want to really add?
I do though. You mentioned the music. Mm-hmm. It was nice. I didn't notice it until the end, but I also didn't watch it more than once like you did.
Right.
it is what I expected from Amniplex. Just solid, solid, pristine artwork.
Yeah.
The story lost me, unfortunately, but that's mainly because I was expecting like an M. Night Shyamalan level twist at the end, which I thought I got, because I thought when the scar started bleeding again, which they didn't open, they didn't do anything for 90% of the show. And when they did, it coincided with his sister getting massive amounts of bruising everywhere. So I thought, oh shit, this is where he's waking up. Everything else was a dream. He's finally accepted the reality of the situation. And it was pouring rain. So we were, that's why I was like, oh, this is reality. Everything else was made up in his head. And then the ending happened, and I'm like, that's completely contradicts what I thought, and not in a bad way.
Right.
But it did make me refocus and relook at what I was going on here, and or what I was seeing and what I was understanding, because it's good that way. So don't trust Netflix, I guess, is one thing I'm bringing out of it. But as standalone episodes, they were really good.
Mm-hmm.
They're nice continuity between episode 1 and 5 and 10 and 13. And I honestly could have seen this going much longer. I could have seen this, depending on how many, I'm glad it didn't, but depending on how many scenarios you could do, it was good. I expected a little bit more adult interaction, people looking for a mom, like his mom and dad when they finally came back in the picture. I was expecting them to be more not aggressive, but like, what?
What's up? Like, the mom and dad, really? I mean, like, come on, dude. 90% of the shows that we watch, mom and dad are always off on business trips across the world.
Exactly. Yes, I get that. But when they showed back up, I was like, breath of fresh air. Okay, now we have another source, another potential asset we can pull, because everything smart was coming out of the science girl. We got no scientific knowledge anywhere else except when it was given by her, and she was a fantastic vehicle for Laplace's demon, things like that. It was I liked that they were crowdsourcing from people of their own age. It was good.
It was nice.
I expected when dad showed up, I expected him to be a little bit more adultish and not so much I'm sorry I abandoned you. It was nice to hear. I wish it happened more often in the anime we watched, where the adult comes in and goes, you know, I really messed up, but I really wasn't expecting the question or the the thing that got me the hardest, where I was like, this is absolute crap, was he asks his dad, so what's it like having a kid? And the dad goes, you're having a kid? And he goes, no, not yet. I'm just curious. And the dad goes, you'll find out when you have a kid. What?
Yeah, because it's not something you could truly ever explain. It's not something easily explained. But the thing is normally when it comes to parents or things like that in the shows, it's not, the mother also ended up having some really hard time and basically having a psychotic break because of what was going on with the daughter. Kade. And so the dad and the son, Sakuta, came to the realization or came to an understanding, look, that he would take care of his sister and he would take care of the mom because they are the ones that are more mentally apparently capable of being able to handle the stresses of what's going on. Now, granted, that puts more stress on the son, and his dad acknowledges that and he understands that. And I'm glad that they did acknowledge that, but
yeah, it, the divide and conquer
time,
method.
Yeah. But at the same time, it was something that was kind of expected, especially when they referenced it, like when all this was actually going on, my parents, you know, had us move out and blah, 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 or our mom couldn't handle it. It was like, okay, well, that's obviously what's going to happen. You know, they're going to come full circle with it. And I'm glad they came kind of full circle, at least with everyone except for Sakuta's. I wish they came full circle for him, but they didn't. But that's all right. I mean, like, I feel like maybe in the movie that we'll get more answers. I mean, and if we don't get it in the movie, it'll obviously be in the light novels and I'll just have to read them.
I'm kind of curious. Do you think, so I realize this is sidestepping completely, but do you remember Full Metal Alchemist?
Yes.
Do you remember, not the Brotherhood, the original, the one that came out?
Yes.
When that ended, I don't know about you, but when that ended, I felt empty. I felt like I was missing something. And then the movie came out and it kind of gave it a better ending. Like the movie was an addition to the series. And I felt like it kind of brought everything full circle to how it should be. Mm. I would not be opposed if the movie ends up doing the exact same thing, you know?
Yeah, I could understand that. We'll get into that later on for Full Metal Alchemist, but you know, I have my own viewpoints, my own feelings on that.
We'll be doing Full Metal Alchemist?
No, that's too many episodes. We can't do that right now.
You got me excited for something. Like, hell yeah. Okay.
No. Bad Rick. Bad.
It's in my top 10, bro. It's like top 5.
I know. A lot of things are in your top 5.
Yeah, only 5 though.
Plus 95.
Well, you know, math has never been my strongest suit.
All right. Goodness.
Yeah, I think with that, I think we're ready for a review or a number. What about you?
So on a scale of up to 10, sir, how would you rate this?
Instinctively, I want to rate it really high because it's got a solid everything. When you look at the premise of what it is rather than what I was expecting, it's a solid 9. But because I still have so many questions, I'm going to go with an 8.
Okay. All right. I'm going to go with a 9. I enjoyed it. I do have some questions, not too many questions, but I do have some questions. I feel like the movie will help answer a lot of those questions. If anything at all, this, I feel like the show really lent itself to a lot of narrative stories for lessons. It's like, you know, hey, just understand what's going on. And the stories overall, even in dealing with the parents, and CJ in our chat points out that the parents for the sisters, for Maya and Nadoka, were very demanding of the children and almost to an unrealistic aspect, but at the same time, I understand that in reality, what the pressures that parents put on their child stars is very, very harsh, very, very heavy. And I feel like the show really did lend itself well to that in showing the type of pressures, showing the type of strain that people, child actors have on them. Like they're put in situations and they're forced to deal with the realities that they most of the time really are not capable of handling or should be handling at this point in time.
That goes back to episode 1, where you're 100% correct in that, where the reason why she wanted to be out of the spotlight is she was forced to do a shoot that she didn't want to do.
Yeah.
Because of her mother. That makes perfect sense.
Exactly.
Yeah, I really like the fact that they didn't have cookie-cutter parents.
Yeah, which lent itself to make it an even better show. So that's why I'm giving it a 9. So next week, We're doing one of your choices there, sir. And it's, I want to say Mayo, M-A-O-Y-U, I believe. Is how you spell it?
Yeah, no, that's how you spell it. I think it's Mayu or Mayo. I I never understood how to pronounce that either. But yeah, yeah. No, this is one I have seen before. This is one that I really liked. This is one I wanted you to watch. And I'm more than happy to watch it again because it flips everything with most genres.
All right. All right. Well, I'm that sounds good to me. Well, hope you all enjoyed this week's choice. Thank you again, CJ, for the wonderful recommendation. We both really enjoyed it. If you have a recommendation or a show that you would like for us to watch or check out, patreon.com/featuredanimepodcast $1 a month get you access to bonus content. Plus, you can message us on there, featuredanimepodcast@gmail.com for any emailing recommendations. Join us in our Discord. We're always messing around in there, talking, goofing off, and everything like that. Link for that's going to be in the show notes at Those Anime Guys on Twitter if you want to message us on there. And in general, this week, actually at the time of recording, in the next couple of days, exclusively for our patrons, we will be talking about Enter the Dragon. So if you want to become a patron and sit in on that discussion, again, patreon.com/featuredanimepodcast. And you'll get access to those bonus episodes, plus some other perks that we're kind of like in the works on, and we'll see how it kind of flushes out. But that's all the time we have for today, and thanks for joining us. I'm Jack.
And I'm Rick. And we'll see you next time.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers, with rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com. Code PROGRAM.